Welcome to the Nourish Me podcast. I'm Joanne Pavin, your host. And if you found yourself here, you're ready to take actionable steps to optimize your health and live a more balanced, productive, and creative life. In our tech-driven world, we need a reminder to slow down, stop the scroll, and take digital breaks. I'm here to inspire you to step away from your screen, to nourish yourself through nature and connection to others, to follow a new algorithm, the rhythm of real life. So let's get started. Welcome back, friends and listeners. This is Joanne Pavin, your host of the Nourish Me podcast. If you're new to the show, I'm glad you found me and I'm grateful you're here. Today, I have a special guest, Swati Mahaske, doctor of Ayurveda from India, now living in the U.S. I had the opportunity to study Ayurveda in India multiple times over the past 2 decades, the first time being in 2006. Ayurveda is the ancient traditional Indian medicine, which is over 5,000 years old and teaches preventing disease by balancing your body with nature or the five elements. It's a preventative system that uses food, herbs, oils, purification, and meditation as a means to stay healthy. Ayurveda also reinforces the discipline of mindfulness in all your daily activities, from eating, sleeping, to moving and thinking. Swati is definitely the Ayurvedic expert. In our discussion, she talks about her experience with Ayurveda and explains that Ayurveda is the science of life. And she emphasizes the importance of addressing the root cause of health issues instead of just treating the symptoms. In our conversation, we highlight the integration of Ayurveda into modern medicine and the use of food as medicine in functional nutrition. This discussion is definitely the tip of the iceberg, and I am certain that Swati will be back to elaborate on Ayurveda and all it has to offer, a holistic and functional health plan for us. A little more on Swati. Swati Mahaske is a doctor of Ayurvedic medicine and the founder of Hemaveda Ayurveda, based in Crystal Lake, Illinois. She received her Bachelor's of Ayurvedic Medicine and Surgery with honors in Panchakarma therapy and her Master of Clinical Research and Pharmaceutical from India. She has over 17 years of hands-on experience in numerous Ayurveda modalities. Swati specializes in treating ailments of the digestive and the autoimmune system and that of the hormonal system in women. Swati nurtures the passion to help her clients lead a healthy life by means of Ayurveda. She is the proud mother of 2 beautiful children. She is an author and a Vedic astrologer. You can find her at www.hemaveda.com. Her website, along with her social handles, can be found in the show notes. Without further ado, I bring you our nourishing conversation. Good morning, Swati.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for coming on. I'm so honored that you want to be here today.
Mm-hmm. That is my pleasure, my honor as well. So thank you for having me here.
Swati and I just met 2 years ago, but we've had a fast friendship.
Yes.
And the divine was working to get us together.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And I always say I'm an Indian sister from another mister because we have this kindred, she's my kindred spirit. Mm-hmm. And as many of you know who know me listening, I've been to India multiple times and I love the country, love the culture, mm-hmm. and love the wisdom that is shared in Ayurveda. And so today we're going to dive into integrating that ancient philosophy and the ancient wisdom of Ayurveda into our modern lifestyle practices. Mm-hmm. I remember when I came back from studying Ayurveda, this is over 17 years ago now, the first time that I came back, and people here in the United States were like, what is that word again? And,
yes.
And I I was so
So
excited to share, right? I mean, they were just like, this is foreign. I had a lot of customers at that time that I was working with in health coaching and training and body work therapy, lifestyle, and they were interested, but it was like foreign to them. Now, fast forward almost 2 decades, and people
Oh my
are
God, yes.
familiar. They're familiar, right? So I think the best way to start is, we know you've been in Ayurveda for the past 2 decades as well. Maybe give us an overview of just your background and when you came to the United States, and you can share that. And then we'll go into understandable description of Ayurveda for those who've never heard of it.
So first of all, I want to thank you for this opportunity to speak on Ayurveda, which is my all-time favorite subject. And being here, connected to you is the most grateful I am to the universe. It's because it's like, it's very hard to find good people. And I can count on you anytime for any wisdom, any discussions, and you are an inspiration to me. So thank you. So,
thank you.
So when it comes to Ayurveda, I did my bachelor's of Ayurvedic medical science. So that means when we study Ayurveda, we become Ayurvedic doctors after we complete like 5.5 hour years of coursework, which gives not only the Ayurvedic perspective of studying one's body, but also the modern perspective of conventional medicine. So it is not just based on the herbs and plants and physiology, but it's also based on the conventional medical or approach as well. So where the scientific knowledge also comes in picture. So basically, there was a lot of studies that were being our subject. So there were more than 16 subjects that we studied on based on Ayurveda. And we had to study is the modern perspective of that subject as well as the Ayurvedic perspective of it. So it's kind of an overall understanding of a human body. It's not just treating it as a subject made up of bones and muscles and tissues and blood. It's way beyond that. That understanding is very important, according to Ayurveda. Then my approach towards understanding Ayurveda into a bit deeper way, when I was very young, I started Ayurvedas at the age of 15. So I was pretty young, very enthusiastic to learn all of these modalities and how really Ayurveda works. So to take my enthusiasm or my interest in Ayurveda furthermore, I wanted to dug deep into is the clinical research side of it. So then I did my master's. I studied Panchakarma. When I did my master's, I did publish some research articles based on how Ayurvedic herbs actually work in our body. So it is not just some random things that are being offered or written, because these scripts are 7,000 years old. And on the basis of those scripts, which are 7,000 years old, which are documented and written by the sages who didn't have like labs and sophisticated instruments or anything or microscopes to look into things, but still they have this theory printed in. They did practically surgeries on people. The first surgeon, which is Sage Sushruta, which is father of surgery of Ayurveda, is he laid the basics of how to do a surgery, literally how to do fumigation of the operation theater and things like that. So all these
can you
basics
clarify
that,
fumigation
that just started mind-boggling
to me. Of
yes.
The laboratory?
Yes.
Or did you call it, what did you call it?
Yes, so like sanitizing it.
Yeah,
the
sanitizing.
Operation theater.
And that was like burning herbs and clarifying the air with herbs, right?
Yes.
Medicinal herbs. Okay.
So when I talk about is like coming back to this fumigation of how to make it antimicrobial or how to reduce the chances of any infection. Acharya Shishruta has his topics written on how to do that, like literally burning some herbs like triphala and neem, which are antimicrobial. So we have the papers right now because we have researched these leaves. We have researched these bark of trees. We have researched the juices and extracts from these trees. And now we know, oh my God, this is antimicrobial. This actually works in the body without killing your good microorganisms, which like many antibiotics do. These don't do that. So these I will actually take care of your intestinal flora as well as killing those harmful bacteria. So he did that. He literally used horse tail hair to do the suturing. So how he sanitized that horse tail hair, how he used it as for suturing the wounds of these people who are into who have open wounds, and how to clean them with natural resources. We didn't have antiseptics and antibiotics and all those lotions and all those things, but they did it. They did the surgeries, and he did the first cataract surgery. He did appendectomy. He did tooth extractions. So there are many eye ailments that he has listed in his books. So all these scripts, they were like full of information. And for a young mind to study this much amount of information and getting exposed to it was a lot of things for me. So I just kept on going. I kept on going. And then I was like, when it was the final time when I needed to get married and get settled down. So I, in my Vedic astrology, in my astrological chart, the astrologers, when I was a very little girl, they used to say, oh, she's going to take this Indian wisdom to a foreign land, and she'll never stay in her motherland. She will be always away from it, and she will be exposing people to this thing. So I was just a 7 year old. I didn't even know what Ayurveda was or where I am going to end up into. But finally, in 2011, the destiny took its complete charge, and then I was here, which I love to be here, by the way. I love to practice Ayurveda states. So I came here 2011. I just took a break because it was a long time for me to like studying and all of those things. So I took a break from all of those things, had my kids, and I was planning to go into the research part of this system. But you know what? What the research involved here was not based on Ayurveda. It was more based on as conventional medicine. And I wanted to use my expertise, my learning from my gurus, my teachers, and help people, which was right from the start. I always had this feeling in me is I need to help people. So I used to have my clients from India, my patients from India, where I used to do my Ayurvedic consultations. And then I just was like a little bit like planning on something. But then I all of a sudden lost my mother. And she, being a nurse for 35 years of her life, was always wanted me to be that compassionate healer for the society, because she herself was a very big healer.
She was a medical nurse.
She was a medical nurse.
In India.
In India. So
yeah,
she always worked with underprivileged people who didn't have the financial conditions to afford medical treatment. So she helped them. She really put her emotions into their treatments as well. So when I became the doctor, she always wanted me to practice as a doctor over here. But as you know, due to the limitations and
regulations,
it's very hard to practice Ayurveda here. But I said, it fits in the domain where I can counsel people. And on the basis of this counseling only, with like maybe a 200 square foot office that I had, I am proud and I'm grateful to these gurus, these teachers, this universe, and friends like you, well-wishers like you, where I made my mark a little bit, where people are healing, people are getting better with Ayurveda. So I started in 2018. Until now, my journey has been fabulous, I would say, because the only reason behind is people are getting better. And that is and that is because of Ayurveda.
And I want to say to that, in India, when I was there, Ayurveda is integrated into the medical hospitals, and they're integrating. It's a well-oiled machine there, where they bring in Ayurvedic doctors as well as medical doctors, and they work together.
Yes,
for the healing of the patient. And there's so much knowledge that Ayurveda brings, but I think that there's just a misunderstanding, or there's just a lack of knowledge in the United States of how it works. And I'd just love to be part of that with you to clear those messages up and to provide the information that can help people heal. And you do have clinical research in pharmaceutical. That's what you were studying in India, right? You have a master's in clinical research. So you know all of that beyond just herbs, or was it drugs too?
I do both. Yeah, I studied both.
Yeah. So you have a full understanding of both basically the Western and Eastern approach. So
yes,
I want to go into just the functional nutrition is a word that we've heard now for like the past two decades in the United States. And functional nutrition basically says that food is medicine, and food as medicine has been a term in Ayurveda for thousands of years. And in the teachings, right? We use food as our first and primary medicine. I want to have you give a brief definition of Ayurveda. We know, I'll say, I'll preface this by Ayurveda is the science of life. It literally means science of life. But can you give the listeners just a general definition and then lead into that with how it applies to nutrition?
It's a very good question. So when we talk about Ayurveda, right? Ayu is life, Veda is knowledge. That means life's knowledge, how to live a healthy life. Now, when we talk about healthy, what is the definition of healthy? So Ayurveda has defined what is the definition of healthy. It doesn't depend on what you weigh on a scale. It doesn't depend on how good you look or the external factors. It's about internal as well as external. When the internal is good, the external will show up. You will not need anything external, like investing in any external treatments, if your internal system is functioning good. How to address this, right? How to define this, the definition of health. So hita, hitam, sukham, dukkham. So that means hita, ahita. That means good and bad are part of our lives. You cannot run from it. You live in a materialistic world where we are continuously being bombarded with many things at a time. May it be being a mother, may it be being a sister, may father and brother. We are attached to different kind of relationships here. And every relationship, everything comes with expectations, right? So hita, hitam. Ahit and hit, so that means good or bad, is going to be a part of our life. Nobody lives a perfectly 100% good life. They will always be going through all these emotional roller coasters all their life. Sukham dukham. Sukham means happiness. Dukham means sorrow. So happiness is going to come. Sorrow is also a part of life. Sorrow gives meaning to happiness. Happiness gives meaning to sorrow as well. So we have to live with that as well. Hita hitam sukham dukkham ahistasya hita hitam manam cha tatra yatrotta ayurveda sa uchyate. That means Ayurveda tells you to live with this with a healthy mindset. So getting into the root cause of things rather than just patching or just putting band-aids on everything is not a solution. That is not a definition of health. It's because health is correction of things. When when a plant, like you have a beautiful plant behind you, right? If you water and nurture the roots right there, right? When you water and nurture the roots, what is going to happen? The leaves are going to be more greener. The plant is going to look happy. That's what we say, right? But if you don't, if it's left ignored, or if it's not, then there is not enough sunlight it's getting, or nutrients, or the soil is too dry, it's not getting enough water. What is going to happen to this plant? Within a week, it will start failing. Within a week, the leaves will start fading. So all of these things, that is how our life is connected. We are living organisms. We are living beings. And that to human being is being pumped into like so many factors. And that is the reason without like anything, we rule the world right now. Humans are the ones which are ruling the earth. There are so many animals. They are also living beings, but are they ruling us? No. Why? Because we have a very active and intelligent quotient in our life, which is our central nervous system, right? Which knows, which is emotionally so active. So Ayurveda says, if you don't address the main reason for the root cause of things, what is happening in your body, then you cannot address, or you cannot call that person as a healthy person. So this is the definition of Ayurveda, that Ayurveda is the most simplistic way to live your life. It is not at all complicated. And that is the reason people who are nurses and physicians and busy people who are influencers, they're working with me and they feel as like we are practicing Ayurveda, we are doing Ayurveda, and it's not hard at all. It's not complicated. It's because Ayurveda is all you. Once you identify yourself as an individual constitution, you know what you are, what you should be eating. There we go.
I think that's beautiful. And it's a full body, it's a full mind, body, soul approach, where in our Western medicine, sometimes we get so caught up in just the body and the physiology. And then they also approach the psychology, but from a pharmaceutical standpoint, or let's try to fix the brain with like a pharmaceutical instead of a lifestyle or a combination of the lifestyle approach that Ayurveda takes. This functional nutrition that came into the wellness circle, you know, over two decades ago, it's gaining popularity. It's gaining awareness. It's a, and they're understanding, like, this is the Western, our Western in the United States, in the Western part of the world, they're understanding that food is medicine and it does help prevent or reverse health conditions. But one thing I see is that they might be missing is that there's an approach of the breath and how the breath affects the digestion. And then there's the mind and how the control over the mind affects digestion, and how digestion is really the beginning of how you assimilate your food into your body. And that they try to solve the digestive problems here at this point in time. They're trying to solve the digestion problems after the digestion happens, when they should back up and look at digestion. So since this is such a foundational part of health in general, can you give the Ayurvedic overview of digestion? That's really where we should start. It's like, okay, we have this life force. How do we take the life force of food into our bodies?
So first thing is, like, let me go to the three pillars of life. Three pillars of life. What Ayurveda has told us, or Ayurveda has given the wisdom for, is first is ahar. Ahar means what we eat. Second is swapna. That means how we are sleeping. And third is celibacy or brahmacharya. That means how we are utilizing our sexual energy. These are the three very important pillars of health according to Ayurveda. When we talk about ahara, because our topic is more focused, so we can talk about those two topics later, because there will be another conversation. But like, when we talk about ahara, when we talk about what we are eating, is always remember this very important thing, that what we are eating is important, but what we are able to digest, or how we are able to digest what we are eating, is more important. So that's why digestion, according to Ayurveda, is very important for us all to understand. When it comes to digestion, there are so many things that go on there, right? There are tons of blog posts, there are tons of podcasts, many, many things. They are like pumping out a lot of knowledge, a lot of wisdom, and then the person gets confused. It's because what happens is they will go online, they will search something, they will think that, oh, I'm inclined towards this dosha, so probably I should be eating this. I have people coming to me saying, I'm this dosha dominant person, and I'm following this diet chart.
It's stop there, because I want to interject with the dosha, and I want to explain just from a Western, and then you can confirm that, because you're the expert Ayurveda doctor. The doshas, I want to explain to people, are a combination of the elements, the five elements. Earth, earth, air, fire, ether, water. I got it all right. Maybe not in your order. But that was... So the five elements in combination make up everything in the universe. And they make up our being, based on how we were conceived, when we were conceived, and all that. And that's a deeper topic too. But that dosha actually means, what I came to understand, is the word means dirt. Is that correct?
The dirt word means is something that is unstable.
Dosha. Unstable. Okay.
Yeah. It is like unstable. It's like, those biostatic energy. So these are kind of energy flows, right? That actually work in the body. So they get, if they get like a little bit twisted, turned, aggravated, and all of those things, they cause illnesses in the body. They cause disease in the body. So doshas are actually dosham dushyanti. That means something that gets bad or unstable very easily. Those are what doshas are.
Right. And that when people go on and they'll do like a simple constitutional analysis, like online, and they'll they determine their constitution by like a 15 question at the tip of the iceberg. Like, they really need to go, they need to go deeper into understanding that there's so much more, there's so much more that goes into a dosha analysis. And that I I know firsthand just from doing it with Western questionnaires prior to going to India, that the Indian questionnaire with the Indian doctor was a lot deeper and takes into consideration a lot more. Yeah. And that's, you know, another topic, but talking about how the dosha works into this whole concept of the pillars, and you can continue on from there. People need to consult either an Ayurvedic practitioner or an Ayurvedic doctor to get their dosha analyzed so they can fully understand how then to build a health plan around that or a holistic nutrition plan around that.
Correct? Yes. Yes. So let's talk about is first we have to understand what are doshas. Okay. So doshas are dosham dushyante, which is like the energies, the biostatic energies in our bodies, which are made up of the five elements. Everything in a cellular structure is made up of all the five elements. And we are basically a massive, massive being of all the complicated cellular structures. Each cell in our body is made up of all the five elements. That's why it is said that it is very important to understand the cellular level and intelligence in order to understand the doshas. So when we talk about these doshas, let's keep the topic a little bit aside and let's focus on these five elements and the cellular structure. When we talk about one cell in our body, and when we talk about these five elements, which I list them right now, the first element is earth element. Earth is heaviness, earth is stability. Right? Earth is like a wall-like structure that comes in front of you when you say the word earth. That earth defines in our cellular structures is the cell wall, right? It is, gives structure, it gives shape to that cell. That is what that structure, that holds onto material inside the cell. And that is what the earth element defines. Then comes is your water element. So we are 70% water. Where is the water? The intracellular water as well as the extracellular fluids or water, that is the water element. When it comes to the third element, which is called as the fire element, fire is responsible for transformation and providing intelligence to the body. When we think, I am hungry, I am thinking, I am responding, all of those things, those are intelligent things that we are doing, our responses. And that intelligent structure in a cellular structure is mitochondria. Mitochondria are the energy pockets of the cell. That means it gives energy to that cell. So how is it going to get the energy to that cellular structure? By consuming something. It tells the cell, hey, you are hungry, go and find something. Hey, you are about to die. How about you multiply? Hey, you are about to... So all of that intelligent thing, when that intelligence is being lost, we have crackpot cells. So that means they're completely lost their intelligence now. When the cellular structures lose their intelligence and it spreads like a wildfire in the body, diseases like cancer are being caused. It is like, right? So cellular intelligence is very important. That defines the fire element. Then comes the space element or the ether element. When we cannot say space, but space is important for communication. So that space, which is the intercellular space, as well as the extracellular space, which lets that cell to move and make decisions in their life, is actually the space element. And when it comes to the last element, which is the air element. Air, again, we cannot touch, we cannot feel. What is air? Air is for movement. So we blow on something, it moves, right? If we, whatever the winds are outside, it is causing movement in the universe. Mm-hmm. That is exactly when the cell is moving in different directions, that is known as the air element is functioning on that cellular structure. So all these five elements you see in that microcellular structure is present. So we are basically made up of those five elements.
Yeah.
These five elements are present or functioning in the form of biostatic energies, which are called as doshas. So
biostatic energies.
Mm-hmm. They are biostatic energies. They are functional only when the biorhythm of the body is going on. When the person is dead, the doshas are dead. The energy is dead. It's gone, right? When the person is making mistakes, when the person is anxious, and still eating, angry, and still eating, all these energies, they start to change. So they are very simple. Energy is not constant. Energy is constantly moving. Energy is constantly communicating. And that is what these biostatic energies are doing in our body. So when it comes to vata, which is the first dosha what we talk about, vata, v-a-t-a, vata vayuhu. That means vata is the wind energy. It comprises of air and ether or space. So that means, what is the function of it now? Communication, as I said, for the space, and movement, air. So vata is responsible for every little tiny to the biggest movement of our body.
And it is the foundational dosha, right? It starts the action in motion. It vata moves to pitta, pitta moves through kapha, right?
Exactly.
Is that right?
Exactly. It is the energy whirlwind that is being created continuously in the body. And that is the reason that we are alive.
Right. And I want to let listeners know that there'll be an intro to Ayurveda post this episode so that you can go deeper with Swati, and that will be listed in the show notes so that you can really get into it and understand. But go ahead. I wanted to interject with that.
Yes.
Go ahead on your...
So then when we talk about the second biostatic energy, which is called as pitta, which is fire and water. So fire and water, they have one common quality. What is the common quality? That they spread. So they need some containers to be in. So basically water, you cannot drink water if there is no container. If you cannot lit fire just in an open ground, you have to put it in a contained manner. That is how pitta is. Pitta in our body is responsible for fire, which is digestion, right? Fire is responsible for transformation, digestion of things. And another is water, which is the water content, which is literally our 70% water. So pitta spreads in our body very easily. This is the biostatic energy which controls our digestion and transformation in our body, which is again a very, very important process to learn when it comes to digestive health according to Ayurveda. Mm-hmm. And the last dosha is called as kapha, which is earth and water. So earth gives stability, earth gives nourishment, earth gives structure. That is how this dosha is. And the second is water. So we basically, if we mix earth and water together, it becomes like a heavy, dense, slimy kind of a structure that comes to our mind. That is how this kapha is. Kapha produce gives lubrication to our body, gives strength to our body, gives nourishment to our body. And these three biostatic energies, I just gave you the physiological aspects of what it's doing. It also has a mindset. It also has your psychological well-being that revolves around these doshas as well. And that is why a dominant person in Vata dosha becomes very anxious very easily, like a mouse. He's a very fearful kind of a person, artistic, but fearful, introvert, that kind of a person. But a person who is Pitta is like a lion. He has a fire in him. So that fire will always poetry. And that is that dosha. Then it comes to kapha dosha. Kapha is more like sluggish because it's a dense dosha, slow dosha, but a very loving, kind of person. So these have their own things, as well as when it comes to digestion, they go step by step.
They all flow together.
They all flow together.
And if one is off, then that interrupts in the flow of the next one and the next one. But so those things, like, people typically don't realize that when they're eating just on the run, or they're using, say, they I know people who just drink coffee and don't have anything to eat until, say, 12 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And there's no stability there for their systems. There's nothing grounding in their systems. Mm-hmm. So shed some light on that as far as how important it is to set up your ingestion of certain foods from waking hours on.
Mm-hmm. So first is understanding the circadian rhythm is very important. When it comes to circadian rhythm, what is this circadian rhythm? So first is, it runs with the biological clock of the body. It is running with the biological clock in synchronization with the universal clock. That means we are the people where, okay, I slept last night is at 12 a.m. I'm going to wake up at 7. Oh, next day I slept at 10 p.m. I might wake up at 5 p.m. Unless and until you don't have a circadian clock set in your brain, it's because I'll give you an example of the universe. When we come to seasons, does the universe say that I'm going to be late to this time? I'm not going to show up this time. The sun will say tomorrow I'm going to show up at 11 o'clock. Or does it change its time? No, the universe is always spot on in changes, right? Then why are we manipulating our bodies when the bodies are naturally have the ability to secrete neurotransmitters, to secrete enzymes, which are responsible for digestions naturally in our body without ingestion of any external input, may it be Ayurvedic herbs, may it be supplements, anything. We don't need anything. What we need is to obey the circadian clock. Many a times, like waking up in the morning, right? What does Ayurveda says? Brahma Muhurte Uttishtate. That means what? Wake up during the Brahma Muhurta. What is Brahma Muhurta? Brahma means where the utter conscious, Brahman, that means the utter consciousness of our body is at the peak level. Okay? It is 1.5 hour before sunrise. Okay? So let's say between 4 a.m. and 5:30 a.m., it can be that that hour where our utter consciousness of our brain is at the optimal state. That is the time what dosha, what biostatic energy is active in our body is the vata dosha, right? So vata is responsible for movement, communication, and any kind of like elimination from our body. So now it is very important that once you wake up, you should go and empty your bowels. Many a times I have people coming to me and they say, oh, I cannot have a bowel movement unless and until I have my sip of coffee or things like that. Now, who did that? You were not fed coffee when you were a little baby and then you pooped. No, that's not how it is, right? I pardon my language, but it is not how you had the bowel movement. You have the you have that set clock into your system. So like when you wake up, at least empty, go to the restroom, try to do some yoga poses, which actually can really help in activating the vagus nerve, increasing the blood flow to your intestines. One of the yoga poses I would like to mention is Malasana.
Yeah, squat right. pose.
Sitting in squat. The squat pose. Very important. It is really good. And people have done miraculous, like these changes have done miraculous effects on their lives. And they tell me that just Malasana has helped them immensely. So that is how your circadian clock should start. Even if you empty the bowels and you sleep for some time, that is also okay. But don't hold on to those, that system that needs to eliminate it at that particular amount of time. That specific time. Then you wake up, the first thing what you do is most of the time people are gulping down gallons of water. I don't know what or why this is happening. It's because it's a simple logic. Water, if you drink after half an hour, you start to go to the restroom, right? Maybe for a bowel movement, maybe for peeing, it all is dependent on what type of motion you're expecting. But water also needs digestion. When you're gulping down that massive amount of water right away in the morning, without sweating, without exercises, without anything, you're just gulping down and overburdening your system with that much amount of water, you are basically diluting the digestive juices.
Yeah.
And now the strength of your digestive juices is already down because it's morning. It's a slow period. The sun is not very bright and very hot. So it's a kapha time. That means it's water and earth time. And on top of that, what you do is most of the time, most of us people do is we start to eat a lot of breakfast. Okay. So eating breakfast like a king, Ayurveda will not support that. It's because it is not how you are supposed to eat in the morning. It is very important that you always start with a slow, warm, cooked and a small portion of breakfast. If you need coffee, I always tell people, I'm not against caffeine. I'm not against anything because it's your choices what you make. The only thing is not first thing in the morning. First, give your body some kind of regenerative things. Like my clients, they eat as regenerative jams. Like they are being made, these herbal formulations are made like thousands of years back, which help support our immune system. One tablespoon of that healthy jam and starting with sweet taste is very important. Gulping down those smoothies right away in the morning, those cold coffees and everything is just going to mess it up more.
It's going to kill the digestive fire.
Exactly.
So if somebody does want to ingest their breakfast with, you know, like say a smoothie, if they are going to do that, they're going to blend fruits or whatever they blend together. What would you recommend? That they do it at a room temperature or that they don't do that at all?
So I am not against smoothies, but for that, to digest those smoothies, you need a very optimal digestive health. Okay. Because smoothies are literally raw churning of all of those things. So let me give you an example. Now you are doing this podcast with me, but side by side, if you are doing like 10 different podcasts with 10 different subjects, with 10 different people, how will you do that? You will be a mess. You will be like, oh my God, what did I ask Swati? What did I ask this person? I don't even remember where this flow is going. So you cannot focus on all these different things at the same time. That happens in a smoothie blend. You tend to blend whatever the things that you hate, basically. All the greens. I have people literally taking care of all this kind of a tick mark thing, saying cruciferous vegetable, take cauliflower, blend it in. Oh, I need protein, put that protein powder or peanut butter in. I need fat, put this fat in there as well as an almond milk or any milk or milk. Like all of these checkpoints were done and this big glass of smoothie is being gulped down. Now it's the digestive system is sitting and solving that mess.
Trying to solve, and I want to say that isn't the mix of dairy and the fruit a miscombine,
yes.
according
it's a
to
miscom
Ayurveda.
Yes. So there are food combination that you shouldn't be eating, eating at all, like honey
I know.
Mixed with hot teas. Honey
yeah.
is already a digested food. It is
yeah.
being digested by the bees, and then you are consuming it.
By the
right?
bees, yeah.
Exactly. So the digestion has already happened. Then you cook it, and you change the chemical composition of it. And there are several studies based on that. I'm just not saying it for the sake of saying it.
Right. Okay.
So all of
so
these things have to be.
The side note on honey is what? The side note is that you don't heat it.
We don't heat it. Don't bake with it. Don't eat it. If you want to eat honey, just eat it like a tablespoon. Honey is good in scraping. So it's good for coughs or phlegm. It is really good. You can have honey just like that. But like,
right, but don't overdo the honey.
Don't overdo it. Don't overdo anything. Anything in
right.
honey.
Yeah, there's
anything is going to create a poisonous effect. So like 1 tablespoon of honey or 2 tablespoons of honey, is ideal rather than going with like massive tablespoons of honey adding for weight loss. That's not a good idea.
No. Okay, that's good. All right. Did you want to continue on with that thought about the
the lunch and stuff?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then when it comes to like when you are done with a small portion of breakfast, make sure that you add some kind of digestive spices to it, like cinnamon, cardamom, dry ginger powder, a tablespoon of ghee, which is being prepared with good quality butter. So those kind of things will stimulate the digestive fire a little bit. It also should be in a very small portion. It shouldn't be a very big portion. And then once you finish the breakfast, then you can have a little bit of caffeine if you want. If you want to have caffeine and you are absolutely dependent on it, reduce the amount of it so that you don't kill your things, and then it doesn't become like Ayurveda is very difficult to follow. And I have clients from 17 years of experience. I never refrain them from something unless they are fighting a very chronic disease. Then I have to stop a few things. I say, no, now you cannot do this. So you can have a little bit of caffeine, out you go for your work. And then comes as like the fruit time. Many people ask when to eat fruit. Fruit has to be like, say, 11 a.m. 10:30 a.m. is an ideal time to eat a small piece of fruit. And again, don't confuse the body with eating tons and confusing things at the same time. Go with 2 fruits at a time. Leave the melons alone. If you're eating a melon, eat it alone because it has so much of water content.
Yeah.
When that much amount of content of water is there, it is good that the melon should be eaten on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can eat the fruit. Then from 12 to 2 p.m., when the sun's energy is at the peak, the digestive fire is also at the peak. So you naturally get hungry. Do not miss that time period. It's because it's the important meal of the day. The largest meal of the day, the most nourishment absorption happens during that time. So always remember.
And that's applying that to the sun being at the highest point in the day with the highest light energy, the highest fire energy, so that if we have the highest fire energy going outside of our body, then the highest fire energy then is reflected inside of our body.
Exactly.
So we are constantly in flow with nature, even though we sometimes disconnect.
Yes.
I think that we aren't really part of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then we live in a real world. We cannot be like sitting on the Himalayas and just meditating. And we cannot. We live in the real world. We have to cope up with it. How are we going to do that? That is what the best part of Ayurveda, what I teach to my clients is this. Like you can do Ayurveda while you don't have to miss your work. Or you don't have to take holidays. Or you don't have to take leaves just to incorporate Ayurveda in your life. These are teeny tiny bit of changes. If you put your efforts through them, they're amazing.
And I think, and I want you to continue with the second part, which is going into dinner, right? Or the afternoon, you're going to finish with that.
Yep.
So I'll keep you on track with that. But I want to say that when you look at Ayurveda from a 35,000 foot view, if you're up on the mountaintop, the yogi on the mountaintop view, and you're looking down and you, it's really just a simplistic form of how to handle handle and manage your health, because if you're continually in flow with the nature rhythms, the rhythm of nature, if you're in the knowledge or understanding that we are continually fluxing with the elements, we are elements, we are the five elements, fluxing with the elements around us, that it makes perfect sense to eat seasonally and to eat simplistic and to follow and mimic what the animals see. If people are paying attention to nature at its deepest level, how animals react to the seasons and how they eat and how they don't overdo anything specifically.
Yes, that is so important to understand.
And I think that, people think it's so complicated, or I feel that the misconceptions are that they just don't have the understanding that it's a science, that there is a science to it. There's a beautiful science to this. An ancient science to it. So, all right, with that, continue on to how we would go through the day.
Okay. So now when we finished our 12 to 2 p.m. largest and the most nourished meal of the day, we proceed forward, let that food digest for 4 hours. According to Ayurveda, it is not good to snack all throughout the day. Snacking interferes the digestive process in a very bad manner. Instead, let that food digest for 4 hours. After that, after like say 5 p.m., 5:30 p.m., naturally the body will again kick into a hungry state. That is the time that you should be having dinner. That is where people fail again. It's because they are either leaving their offices, they are on a commute, they cannot have a meal and things like that.
Right.
What I tell them is, if you can pack a little portion of your lunch and with you, and you can eat a proper nourished food that time, that is a good idea, instead of gulping down caffeine, instead of eating some snacks, which are like store-bought or some junk food. That is going to impair the digestive fire more. Or people will I have seen people, especially women, carrying those big chunks of almonds and pistachios and nuts and all of those things, gulping them down because they are superly hungry. So I always tell them, how about you take a little bit of extra lunch, or probably pack a sandwich from work or wherever you can, and have that kind of a proper small meal rather than snacking on these things, which are going to produce more acid.
Right. I was going to ask you, what do those, that I know so many of my friends and myself included, that will grab a bag of pistachios. What is that doing?
Yes,
in
so
that
see,
time?
When it comes to like nuts, right? Any kinds of nuts which are being dried, which are not in the fruit state anymore, they are being difficult. They are very heavy to digest. So nuts are like, they're good. They can satisfy your hunger, but how much portion do you eat? Because you are so hungry, you keep on eating, you keep on gulping down.
But a small handful is okay.
Handful is okay in a day.
Yeah.
A handful. How much into your fist is how much it is okay. Then you can have that. You can sip on some warm water or maybe an herbal tea or something, which is a stimulating digestive tea. It is very good, like a CCF, like cumin, coriander, ginger tea, or probably like a yogi has very good blend of teas as well. So you can go, you can have one tea, a cup of tea, as well as a little portion of almonds. That is okay. And one nut at a time, instead of like blending all these nuts together and eating them. So that is also another thing. So, and then when it comes to like before sunset, like not during that sunset point, but before sunset, try to have your dinner. After sunset, just close, like just don't open the mouth.
Sew it shut.
Yes, yes. It's because those cravings will happen. If you are nutritionally deficient, if you're not eating enough, you are anxious, you are scared, you are fearful, you are more angry, you are more agitated, your mental state is not well, you are going to go for binge eating patterns, because you will try to suppress those emotions with food. And the cycle will start.
And I think the most important thing for digestion in general is to slow down. That's the whole concept behind my writing the past 5 years about the meal experience. It should be slower.
It's slower.
That before you put anything in your mouth, you should take a deep breath. And can you get into a little bit about how to breathe before a meal or how to center yourself before a meal? Because that affects the digestion.
Of course it does.
Right,
it's because
right?
let me tell you, the basic fundamental, very easy to understand concept is we are 70% water. We are energy beings, right? So if you put a glass of water, and that research has been done, right? If you put a glass of water and if you curse it, the geometrical formulation, the symmetry of that water molecule changes, literally. Under a microscope, they have analyzed it, that how that changed. And when you say good thoughts to that water, when you give good thoughts to that water, say good things, positive things, that water's chemical constitution changes. So my mother-in-law does this meditation where she will meditate on positivity, compassion, everything, and she'll keep a glass of water in front of her. After that meditation, she will gulp down that water, or she'll give a sip to every person in the family, because it is being given a positive energy. So the food is actually the most important ritual in our life is eating. It should be, I feel.
Yeah, most sacred act.
Yes, we are working is for food and shelter and clothing, right? So that is what we are working hard for. So when we have that food and we are lucky to have food on a plate in front of us, we should be very thankful. We should be grateful. We should be sending good amount of energy into that. It's because let us compare two situations over here. A person is sitting in a multi-million dollar mansion with lots of disgusting thoughts coming to his mind. Maybe he's suicidal, maybe he's panicked, maybe he's fearful. All those negative thoughts are there. He has a very beautiful silver plates. Waiters are serving him. He orders food and it will come to him. But those negative thoughts, what he's consuming and he's thinking while he's eating, is going to turn that food into poison. But a person who works on a daily wage but is happy, is sitting there with his family, giggling and laughing, and they just have a dry piece of toast on their plate, that can turn into nectar.
Yeah, into nectar.
There are so many important things that we have to consider when it comes that I should be thankful. I always tell my 6-year-old and 10-year-old, sit down and pray to the food and give good thoughts. If you don't like something in the plate, you can tell me that, Mom, can I like take this or eat this later? I'm not in a mindset of eating it. You can keep it aside.
Yeah.
But the thing is, don't curse, don't make a frowned face and start gulping down that broccoli for no reason. I don't know what's up with this broccoli thing. Like, my kids eat broccoli. Everything is one over here. It's not about that. It's about how happy that child is eating. Of course, if you give the child a donut and broccoli a choice, of course he or she
they're
will
gonna have the donut.
Right?
Yeah.
But I have seen it, experimented with my own kids. If you give them a donut and something like a home-cooked meal or rice and lentils, they will choose that.
Right.
They will not
exactly.
choose it.
No, right. And they need to expand their palate early so that they can, and that's a whole nother topic, right? The six tastes.
The six tastes.
Because in America, we commonly, in our diet here, is, you know, it's, we're a young country, you know, but within that time frame, it's like the American diet, right? Sweet, salty, sour, sweet, salty, sour. And thankfully, with, you know, the immigration of many different cultures into our country, we have so many different tastes now in the ethnic foods. But people, I think, forget about the bitter, astringent, and
exactly
pungent.
It's pungent.
And it's easy. It's easy just to consume your diet daily in the three tastes and eliminate, you know, the others. Can you add to how that affects our mental?
Yes. So mental state.
Our moods.
Now,
our mental state.
And moods, right? Now, first is inclination towards like all these six tastes, right? First is we have to incorporate all the six tastes in our diet on a regular basis, okay? When it comes to, nobody will go for a bitter taste compared to a sweet taste. Sweet is something, that's why many people get into this pattern of eating sweets as a binge eating pattern, particularly women. When they're emotional, when they are perimenopausal, when they're menopausal, most of the time they get like very sensitive. They'll pick some sweets and they will compensate those thoughts in their mindsets. Sweet is important too, because it provides nourishment. It gives happiness to the body. It gives calmness to the body. So sweet is also important, right? When it comes to sour is also important. It's because sour actually aids in digestion. but it has to be limited. So sour drinks like kefir or buttermilk, freshly prepared buttermilk, is good for digestion. It aids digestion. When it comes to salty actually provides taste to everything. Without salt, we cannot eat anything. The moment
Right.
we taste something, the first thing, if there is no salt, will not demand pepper first. Will demand is if the salt is lacking, because it's responsible for the taste, right? The salt is important.
I want to interject just because I think people get so nervous about salt because of the sodium levels in our packaged food. And that really, salt is good. There's nothing wrong with salt, but we do have to watch that because we don't want to be salting food on top of if you have a high processed diet to begin with. So it's like what I think what the protocol is to eliminate all of your packaged food ingestion and then get back to the basis of building a whole food diet. And then adding salt to your cooking isn't bad anymore. I mean, people think, oh, I don't salt anything. I'm a no salt. And I don't want to go down that rabbit hole because it is such a big thing with hypertension and people who have high blood pressure. But salt is good. Can we say that? Salt is good.
Yes, salt is good to consume as well. It is because the thing is, it's about the limitations of every taste that we are consuming, right? Excess of sweet is not good, excess of sour, excess of bitter, excess of astringent. Nothing excess is good, but salt is important. When you say no salt diet, no sodium diet, first is your palates, right from the childhood, have been manipulated by these industries by giving you more salt. Salt is directly connected to your electrolytes, your nervous system as well. So what happens to your nervous system? It gets addicted to it. So all of a sudden, the lack of taste happens when you eat normal food, like a home-cooked meal, and you keep on pouring the salt more and more. That is poisonous. But if your palates are being like that, right from my childhood, my palate was like eating home cooked fresh meals. So when I eat, suppose I go outside and I cannot eat a bag of chips at all. I cannot.
Good.
It's super salty for me.
Too
Salty,
salty.
right? Even like if I take a sandwich or something and I eat it, I feel like, oh my God, like it's so much salt in here. So I feel that because my brain is processed. But if you're not brought up like that, your salt consumption naturally is going to be more. Instead of that, taking natural salt like Himalayan pink salt, like
Yeah,
the black
Himalayan.
salt, which aids digestion, which have the sulfur content more in it a little bit, which aids the digestion more. But again, not overdoing it. So that is
Yeah.
very important. When it comes to astringent taste, astringent is important in formation, dryness of things. So astringent is important if you are obese or if you are overweight. Astringent taste actually helps you make your system dry up a little bit so that you
Okay.
naturally decrease your fat levels. And bitter is the most detoxifying taste ever. That is why my daughter always asks me, Mommy, why not like kale is tasty? Why not spinach is tasty? Why not these things are tasty? Why donuts are tasty? So I always tell them, like, see, God has put you through this test. Who has produced these things has put you through this test, like how you can control your senses, how you can put them under control. And it's up to you whether to pick three donuts at a time and eating them, or whether a small, nice home cooked meal or a soup and enjoying that. So naturally, your brain will adapt to that. And right from childhood, if you do those changes, you will see behavioral changes in all of these things. A
Well,
lot
I
of.
guess it's t it, you're right, and it's tuning into how you feel and empowering children to connect with how does that make you feel? If you
Exactly.
eat three donuts, tell me how you feel in 30 minutes. You know, and I think they understand. I have children the same age as yours, so I know that they get it. And now they're recognizing that their kids, that they're one of the few at lunch that actually eat healthy food. Well, we eat really healthy foods, Mom, because such and such brings this and a bag of Cheetos and that. And not that that's bad. I don't want to, you know, because sometimes people just don't know. But again,
Exactly.
it's our job to educate and share.
Exactly. Right from the children, like do that. Like many a times, like I would suggest to like other people is, instead of like, it's not refraining. It's not like my kids don't eat chocolates or they don't enjoy donuts. No, it's not like that. The only thing is that the limitations is good. They should be able to pick what's good for them. Once they start making all these changes, it will be such a nice journey for them. They're not stuck anymore. They're not the people who are like, oh, I don't know how this tastes, or I don't eat it because it's garbage. I never say that to them. I never say this is garbage, this is good. I always tell them, you make a choice.
Make a choice and
You make a choice.
determine how it makes you feel
Exactly,
as
exactly.
well.
Determine how you
It's
feel after you eat that.
intuition. It's actually stepping back and giving the space, like you said. We
Exactly.
need space in our physiology. We need
Yeah.
space in our brain. We need space everywhere. And that in the fast-paced society we live in, we don't give enough space for anything.
Exactly,
So
exactly.
people are rushed and clogged, right? It's all
Continuously.
clogged up.
Yeah.
So I want to do a review of what we did so much, but and there's so much more to touch on, but just to kind of summarize where we went with this, the understanding of Ayurveda the overview was wonderful in that we have the elements, we're made up of the elements, and the elements make up the doshas, and the doshas are in everything, including our food. And then we have this movement of the doshas through our body
Yes.
and in the universe in general, in nature, in the movement, in the seasons. And we also have the six tastes. And from the six tastes, we could also go into so much, which is the
Yes.
attributes of food and the qualities of food. But
Yeah.
just for the purposes of this part one, and we can continue on to, explore the attributes of food and how they affect the mental and the digestion. Let's not forget the digestion and how we've talked about the importance of stimulating digestion and that's really the foundation for people to tap into how they're digesting their food, but prefacing their digestion with breath, calm, mindfulness.
It's very, very important.
Right. So can we wrap up with any additional thoughts that you have on how Ayurvedic nutrition can help, or tips, maybe three tips that you can give people today with how they can get started with either their breath or simple things that they can do?
So three important things. What I would suggest, or how we can start, is first thing is be grateful, be thankful whenever you are eating. At least 5-10 minutes of that quiet eating is, I think, you have the right to do it. Even if you are working, you're on a job, in a business, whatever it is, don't rush. All this rushing is making it horrible right now. So your building pillar is first is be grateful, be thankful. Whenever you are eating something, make sure that you calm down a little bit. Just like even if you are standing and eating, like there are different jobs people are doing. So just make sure that you're focused on what you are eating, how much you have taken and on your plate, what you really need, what you is it necessary? Is it should I be eating this or not? And things like that. Second thing is always important to follow the circadian rhythm, the clocks of our body. It is very important to sleep on right time, to eat on right time, and to respect our body's rhythms. Very, very important. And third thing is knowing your constitution is very important as well, because it is all dependent on what, as I said, what on the plate you should be inclined towards will depend on the constitution or what dosha you are dominant in. So always remember that if I want to balance my body, keep it healthy, you have to balance the doshas. The balancing of the doshas will happen only when the circadian clock is being followed. The circadian clock will be followed. It would be integrated in our life if we start feeling grateful and thankful for what we have, and we appreciate and we love ourselves. It's so important. So these three are the key points to understand when it comes to following of Ayurveda.
And so setting up the mental is key, right? And I think people just forget about that they're going through the motions, they're counting calories, or they're focused on the macronutrients, or they're focused
Yes.
on a fad diet that happens to come, that it's, eat, high protein, eat high fat, eat high carb, eat,
Yeah.
it's all over the board, right? Eat for your
Don't go
blood type.
there. Everything is meant for this optimal digestion that you have to. Optimal digestion will come from all these three key points.
All these three things. Typical way that we go through life, so rushed and fast paced. If we could just slow up and take a brief breath break before we eat, I think it would change everything right away. Sitting down also, I tell
Sitting
people
down.
just sit down. Although my mother's turning 84 soon, and she said, I've been standing and eating my whole life and I'm 84,
Oh
so leave me
my
alone.
God. I
So
know, I know.
I love that.
It's
She's adorable. She's so great. And it's worked for her. Although,
Mm-hmm.
she does sit for some meals, but when you're on the go and you have a lot of children, you're usually eating standing up. But if you could at least find a moment to sit down, would you agree? Sit down.
Yeah, sitting down, just cross your legs if you can. Don't spread them out. Don't sit in a different position. Just sit how you are sitting in a yoga pose, like just sitting by
Okay.
folding your legs quietly where your spine is completely grounded. You are
Grounded.
straight, as well as like the plate is on the ground. When the plate is on the ground, it's good to bend and eat so that
Yeah.
you don't overeat
Yeah.
when you are sitting on a chair. So it is very
Right.
important when you bend down and eat. And always remember the key mantra behind it. Eat until you are satisfied. Don't eat until you get stuffed.
Right.
Got it? Satisfaction, that means there is always an indication that the body will give either a burp or either a feeling where it says, you know what? I think I'm done. That is the time that you have to keep the plate away. That's it. If you cannot do that, and if you are watching a very emotional, some kind of drama on the TV, if you're watching
Oh,
some,
turn it off.
yeah, turn it off.
Don't
Turn
turn it off.
off
We
those things. Disconnect. Focus only on two things. That I live
focus.
because of this. This is what life means to me, and I'm
Yeah.
very truly grateful for it. And your breathing will calm down. And your breathing will be synchronous. Every time when you eat, try to like mix that saliva in your mouth properly into that food, the bites. And when you start doing that, like literally chew on water. That is what a documentary that was being published recently. Not recently, it was a time back. It's very, very important to even chew on water.
Yeah.
And automatically, like gulping down, that's why the food size is
Yeah.
so big. And like the portion size is so big. And then we feel we have to finish it all. And then we
No.
start gulping it down. That's
Right.
exactly
No.
wrong. That's completely wrong.
I know. I
Right?
know. And
So that is why it is very important.
yeah. So take us into a brief meditation. I love to end my episodes with a guided meditation. It can be something that will set us up for good digestion, or it can be something that calms our mind. Whatever you're led to do, would you do the honors of that for
Sure.
our listeners? And we
Yes.
can wind the episode down with your meditation. Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much. So first is I want you to take a deep breath, starting from your tailbone, feeling that the energy, the breath is coming from your spine to your throat, the energy, the feeling of air, the warm air. Inhale. Then you close your eyes, close your senses. Just be with your own body, own system. Hold on to that oxygen and then exhale. Inhale once again. Hold on to the breath and exhale through your mouth. Now we are going to focus on our digestive system, which is near our belly button. All the energy, the fire, the wind, the wetness, everything, it resides in near the belly button. Every element that is present in our body is responsible for us being healthy. So when we focus on the digestive system over there, you need to send a lot of positive affirmations. What you love about yourself, what you are grateful for, what you are thankful for, what you wish for your body to be healthy and happy always. You need to give those continuous affirmations to your body, particularly your digestive system. And tell it that I am healing, I am healthy, I am happy. So it is very important to take care of the nutritional element. What we eat are what we are. So always this mantra should be positively taken, and whatever we are eating, we should be grateful for. And bow to your spiritual being, because you are human. You have all aspects guided to you. And if you are positive, if you are healthy, if you are happy, you make the world happy as well. The energy that you continuously put through, put ahead, put in front of you, will always come as a healing energy. Take a deep breath from your belly. Hold and exhale through your nose. Namaste.
It's beautiful. Thank you, Swati.
Thank you
and it just and it just happens to be around the lunch hour that we're doing this recording.
Yes.
So I'll have happy, healthy digestion.
Mm-hmm.
So where can our listeners find you?
So they can find me on my website, which is Hema, which is my late mother's name, H-E-M-A, Hema. Veda, which is the knowledge, it is vedaveda.com. So they can reach out to me. I do have a Google profile where they can see my reviews, how my clients have shared their stories. And also they can reach out to me on Facebook if they type my name or my business name, which is Hema Veda and Ayurvedic Healing for Happy and Healthy Life. So mm-hmm. follow me there on Instagram. You can follow me on Ayurveda My Life.
Nice.
And I keep on posting. I try to be as active as possible. I'm open to any questions. I'm open to any queries associated with Ayurveda, your personal health as well. But thank you so much, Joanne, for this opportunity.
Yeah, and all of her handles will be in the show notes, as well as her website. And her upcoming workshops and events can be found at her website. So I am so grateful. And this was just the tip of the iceberg, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to cover with what we eat and how it affects our mood, our whole being, and how it affects really all of those around us, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because so society and mm-hmm. it does. How everybody's eating does affect society.
Exactly.
It's a deep topic. So I can't wait to go into it further with you on another episode. So I hope that you'll come back.
Yay! Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much for being here, Swati.
Thank you for having me.
Until next time.
Yes.
Namaste.
Until next time. Namaste.
Thanks for listening. And if you feel inclined to nourish this podcast, please leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts.